We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
I fucked this up. Nope, I did not. Sorry.
Right.
We are officially live. This is my second time driving with the keys to the show and probably the last time.
All right.
Sorry about that, Blair. Anyway, all that out of the way, aborted intro and all, but joining me today on the show are both John Solis and Devin McIntyre. You may know them from the Solis Report podcast that is exclusive here to RotoViz Radio. If you aren't following them on Twitter, I don't know what you're doing with your life. Do so already. Go to @SolisReport and @DevinMCI. Guys, thanks for joining me. How's it going?
Good, Hassan. Thanks for having us, man. Our pleasure.
Yeah, happy to join the Fantasy Football Report once again. It's been a minute.
It has. And welcome back. And we're getting ready as we're all getting ready here for Thanksgiving. You know, I always want to give thanks to the beast himself, Jonathan Taylor. He rushed 32 times today for 185 yards and 4 touchdowns in the Colts' Week 11 win over the Bills. That wasn't all. He also added 3 more catches for 19 yards and a score. Guys, I know who I'm giving thanks to on Thursday.
Devin, go ahead. We'll get into the rhythm of this.
Me too. I'm giving thanks to the beast himself. I didn't even know that was his nickname.
Well, I mean, look, the big dog's gone and he's never did anything this good, right?
That's true. Did you come up with that nickname, or is this like a nickname that he has now that I just like didn't know about?
I just made it up, but we're just going to run with it from here on out.
I'm good with that. I just wanted to know the context here. I'm good. I'm good. I'm also giving thanks for the beast, even though I have Nyheim Hines and I don't understand what's in store for him, but that's okay.
You're the last remaining Nyheim Hines owner, by the way, and that includes famous dynasty player Nyheim Hines. He cut himself much earlier this season. That is remarkable death. Guys, I got to give thanks to Justin Jefferson, actually. I don't know the exact stat breakdown, but I was thumbing through the fantasy scores earlier, and there was one ray of sunlight for me, and Justin Jefferson came up with something like 40 PPR points. I'll take that. That's fine. Doesn't do you a lick of good if you're up against the beast. But otherwise, a nice day for Double J.
It was pretty amazing. I don't know if you watched, if you were watching the end of that game. It came down to the Vikings kicker having to make a game-winning field goal. I thought that I definitely knew what was about to happen, and then it didn't. They won I don't know if it counts as an upset. I thought that they would beat the Packers, but close. Certainly was a toss-up, and that's just a recipe for the Vikings to tragically miss at the very end. And so I don't know what happened. I mean,
they went off script then.
Yeah,
they went off, man.
Has the curse been lifted?
I genuinely thought he missed when the kick was trying to sail through the uprights. I was like, for sure, this is gonna doink off the goalpost. I was like, if you guys go back to watch the highlights of that field goal, you will swear until it splits the uprights, this is going wide right. like there is like no chance in a dome. Like I was like, this is it. This is gonna hit the uprights. Like this is not gonna make it. Bit disappointing, actually, if I'm being honest with you guys.
Is this the type of show we can just cue that up and it'll just, here it is. Let's take a look.
I wish. No. okay. I already can't, like, I can't properly do the intro. Like, I might accidentally, like, melt down YouTube. Like,
this. We don't want that. But I will agree with you, gentlemen, that every kick this year has felt like a Hail Mary, has it not? Like, kicking a field goal, that's impossible. Why even trot them out? Like, from any distance, make a field goal.
It, like, 36 yards, 50 goal. Yards, I don't have any more or less confidence. They're the same. No. In borderline extra point, I'm like, go for two. That's, you know, when you run them.
Uh-oh.
Oh, no. Well, to Dev's point, though, we did have Justin Tucker, who was struggling. For those of you who are not on the stream, I promise Devin is just sort of frozen while trying to make a point. But you know, just to his point, I do know what he means about the kicking woes. Harrison Butker missed one. I know Justin Tucker has struggled as well this season. If anything, I wonder if I kick him out and bring him back, bring Devin back in, but.
Give it a go unless he's just really faking us out. Devin does this to me all the time when we're recording our show. He'll do a uh-oh, Hassan, I think I'm freezing too.
Well, I guess he must have left on his own accord there. That's okay. Devin will be back at some point. But yeah, no, John, that's a really good point with Justin Jefferson. I know a couple of weeks ago, the Mike Zimmer just realized that he hadn't been giving Jefferson the ball at all. So he was like, we got to dial it up big time. And I mean, good things happen when you target him. Just out of curiosity, from a dynasty perspective.
Oh, yeah.
You know, like, where are you on Jefferson? Like, who do you have as your dynasty wide receiver one, and where is Jefferson there for you?
Okay, so this is a cop-out. Let me disclaim this by saying this is a cop-out, but I think of them more in tiers than an obvious overall 101. You know, there's times when you could have told me A.J. Brown was your 101, and that would have been perfectly acceptable to me. But right now... you could say Justin Jefferson's your number one dynasty receiver. That's completely fine. Jamar Chase, that's a really fun answer. You don't like to overinvest after just 1 year, you know, as an avid Juju buyer everywhere. You know, I know the sting of going all in on a young wide receiver after one good year. But put him at number one. Like, who do you have above Justin Jefferson? Who? Like, let's hear it, right?
No, you like I'm with you on that. I do think that so Blair and I had this discussion, and I think that the way we were looking into it was, you know, and there he's back. The way we were looking at these like receivers where it was Justin Jefferson, Jamar Chase, AJ Brown, probably CeeDee Lamb, and there's one other one who I'm forgetting right now, but you know, it really is a toss up because those are your top five. So there's no issue. I'm sorry.
I'm guessing the missing one was DK Metcalf at some point. Maybe.
I think it is actually Metcalf. You're right. I think it was Metcalf. And it's interesting because two of them are teammates, right? So CD's the odd man out there. But you know, we were having this discussion and it's just a matter of, I guess it genuinely depends on how many leagues you play in and who you really just want to have more fun with, because they're all so young and there's so much fun that it's just very hard to not root for these guys, you know?
Indeed. Do you have a dino wide receiver one who is not Justin Jefferson? Cause Hassan asked me, no, Justin Jefferson's number one, or at least in the top tier. And then I asked Hassan, he said, oh, yeah, Justin Jefferson, no one else. Do you think we're crazy being this hard on Justin Jefferson?
No, I think it's I think it's probably Jefferson. I tend to have kind of like flatter tiers.
Yeah.
Than some people do. You know, it's like, I think you can get a little bit in the weeds, like doing your, like,
I think you just
splitting the hairs on those rankings because you have to if you're like a content creator or something like that. But, you know.
Yeah.
But yeah, I don't think there's really anyone who I would be. If you were like, if you offered me anyone and said, will you trade me straight up for Justin Jefferson, I would probably be keeping Jefferson.
Yeah.
Wow.
It's tough though, right? Like because Jonathan Taylor's probably the dynasty 101, right? Like in non-superflex formats, you probably want Jonathan Taylor. But you know, like there's concerns around the guys who we were, you know, that we like, guys like CMC, guys like Saquon, guys like Dalvin, like, you know, running backs who are really, really good. But then you've got these other like wide receivers who are young, each and every one of them kind of like a promising cornerstone a little bit almost like, and you get like, we know the shelf life for these wide receivers is a lot longer than it is for running backs. I mean, like people haven't seen Saquon and he's like out of sight, out of mind. And we know how good he is, right? Like it's, I don't know. I feel like getting in on these really talented wide receivers through a startup is probably the only way to go, right? Like you're not like, how can you trade for some of these guys?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I mean, it's very league dependent too, but you know, I tried to trade for Jonathan Taylor before the season.
Yeah.
And I was offering Stephon Diggs, who was like at that point, like the clear cut number one receiver. And it could have just been the league that I was in, but there was like no movement. And I was like, even with like RotoViz like type crowd, not taking the number one receiver over a running back like that's unusual. So the sentiment on Jonathan Taylor is super, super high even before this season started.
What? I don't mean to ruin Devin's anecdote with something called context, but I think the audience should know that your trade partner was not a, you know who it was, right, Dev? Can I share? It was Jonathan Taylor's mom. Jonathan Taylor's mom was the trade partner. Of course she's not trading it. She was like, throw in a third.
I should have realized
that. That's my son.
What was the connection, John? How did she get in the league? And also, I did not know that she used to write for RotoViz. But
oh, is this interesting. This was in the RDL?
Yeah, this was in the RDL. I think I was trying to trade with Ryan, but who knows? Maybe I had a bad offer. That was the crux of the trade, though. Was kind of like, are you interested in a Diggs? Jonathan Taylor Diggs move where you're moving your deal. Yeah, are you interested in moving your value from running back to wide receiver? And usually in a RotoViz centric league, the answer is yes. There's not that many
Diggs gets a plus one in a RotoViz league. So especially there.
Yeah.
You know, I traded my Christian McCaffrey, my sole share, so to speak, recently. And I got a nice return for him. But you can call John Taylor the 101 in Dynasty, but I'm never taking him. Like, just play Dynasty for 1 year and look what happens to everyone's favorite running backs ever. Like, as impressed as we are with Jonathan Taylor today, Todd Gurley did it 2 years in a row. And now is he on a team? Can anyone tell me if he's on a team? Is he just in the garbage? Is that where Todd Gurley is?
Yeah, I don't know if he's even fit for the XFL right now. Like the current iteration of the XFL, which doesn't even exist. Like, I don't think he's going to like be around.
He's not even hypothetically good enough for the XFL. And just start at Todd Gurley and work forward in time. Who's the angel after Todd Gurley? David Johnson? Right? I mean, and then who's next? CMC and then Saquon. Both super talented guys who, you know, aren't necessarily winning your dynasty leagues. So, okay, John Taylor, 101, have a fun season and, you know, talk to me in 2022, I guess.
Yeah.
I don't know.
The one thing I did want to actually bring up about Devin, you mentioned that like, you were trying to move Diggs for JT. What was interesting was in this offseason, like for drafting best ball, you could get Diggs in the first round and then you could get JT in the second, right?
So the redraft crowd was a lot slower than the dynasty crowd here, in that sense, right? Because there are yeah. teams that you have that I have that have that exact combo, right? Like, and it was not a difficult combo to get if you're getting stock with the 108 or later for the most part. Like they were like JT was going very very late. You could get him at like the mid to late second. Like if you wanted Jonathan Taylor on your team in this year in best ball and had a second round grade on him, you could have got him. Like there were people were taking Mixon ahead of him, people were taking Aaron Jones ahead of him. Just name a running back, and people were taking him ahead of JT, right? And like JT became your free second round run, like free square second round running back, especially if you subscribe to RotoViz, because we had him ranked as like the 105. Like he was like our fifth overall pick.
Mm-hmm.
And that's actually a pretty big hit for our rankers, because I mean, you're talking about like 12, like a difference of like 12 or like 13 or 14 or 15 like picks, but it's like, yeah, but that's like, there's a very big difference in like the first and second round there. Like, you know, I mean, like, so we had like a first round grade and a guy who's like the market has priced a second round pick. So if you wound up with like 30% Jonathan Taylor, like I did, your best ball teams are looking pretty okay. You know what I mean?
Yeah, definitely. Indeed.
RotoViz gave you an edge there. If you're paying attention. Yeah. And why do you think we overthink these things? Huh? Like, first of all, you know, this isn't a new take I have in the aftermath of a 5-score game from Jonathan Taylor. But even when he was coming out of the draft, you have the best pure rusher, obviously, unquestionably the best pure rusher behind what was then and still probably the best offensive line. Dev, what's going on, pal?
I'm not sure. I just disconnected, but it's working, I guess.
No, you are alive, man. You are good. So anyway, obviously the 105, right? Obviously, but we'll do whatever we can to talk ourselves out of unsexy situations, which I guess that was the perception at that time.
My guess is people were like talking about like Frank Reich and his like love of like multiple running backs. And it's like, okay, yes, I get it. But you're still playing. But like, we still kind of emphasize that you want explosive, exciting players on your team, right? Like, not all touchdowns are created equal. And like, Jonathan Taylor kind of manufactures them by sheer, like almost like how Big Dog does, right? Like how Derrick Henry does. And then he also has like the receiver element. I don't know. Dev, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, I think just the overall sentiment on the Colts just got so negative through the course of the offseason that was really kind of a big part of it. And then it was also, I don't even think it had that much to do with Taylor, because I think people really do like him. Yeah. I think it was just other players that were getting, you know, people were getting a little too infatuated with, not necessarily wrongly. Now it looks wrongly because you can see who made it and who didn't. But, you know, there were a lot of different guys like Gibson and Eckler and people who were like, as happens every year, that we have the same exact discussion of like, what happens if you have a pick at the turn and people say, well, you have to like shoot for the stars because otherwise you can't beat Christian McCaffrey. And it's like, that's, that's not your goal anyway. I mean, if you're trying to pick somebody better than the number one pick at the 112, you're not going to win. Like, you just have to hope that you have your shares of McCaffrey as well. And you win those leagues. And the other ones, you know, you just have to make a team that works well in the case that McCaffrey doesn't have a great season, which, you know, is where we find ourselves. So if you went with Gibson or somebody who you were hoping was going to have like 100 receptions or something, and you may have missed on a more obvious choice. But
I think this kind of goes back down to, and this is going to sound really sad, but it goes back down to like almost one of the founding principles of RotoViz from like 2012 or 2013 about realistically like chasing volume, right? Like we're a decade into this, right? Like, and you know, like all the basic stuff, like chasing volume and, you know, how targets are like the lifeblood of fantasy scoring, blah, 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 right? Yeah. And like the one thing that we as a community are pretty good at is knowing who's going to get a lot of volume early. And then the issue is, like, after the guys who have, like, a massive, like, stranglehold on their workloads, like Saquon and CMC and Joe Mixon and all these guys, right? Like, people get very, very, very nervous about taking rising sophomore backs with mediocre talents or perceived threats behind them, right? Like a Marlon Mack or a Nyheim Hines who's going to steal all the third down work. So it's like, well, where does JT fit into any of this? And it's like, all right, so the guys from RotoViz are out here saying, no, you really need to do this, right? Like, so Sean and, like, Ben are basically, like, on stealing bananas. They're basically like, yeah, like, lie, cheat, steal, do whatever it takes to get, you know, Jonathan Taylor on your roster. Like, it doesn't matter what you think about the offense. And then you have the same thing with DeAndre Swift, right, who showed again today, he went off. Like, he had 14 rush attempts, went off for 136 yards and a score, right? In the Lions' week 11 loss to the Browns, and people try to play this extrapolation game with how good the offense might be. And it's like, well, Swift went off for 100 plus yards and a score with something called Tim Boyle under center, you know? the shying away of an explosive, talented player because you think the offense is not going to be good doesn't mean you should shy away from them. I don't know. Devin, do you have anything? Like, am I making sense?
Yeah, I mean, I think that it's probably correct to generally shade bad offenses and give a boost to good offenses if you know what they're going to be. And that's the part that we're just not actually capable of doing. Every once in a while, you have teams where it's really very much the same team as you've seen year after year after year. But most teams are not that way. Usually it's a new team and you don't really know. So, you know, you can do it a little bit, but, you know, it's like Swift, he did have a good game, but, like, the Lions have not been the most conducive offensive environment for him. So, you know, I don't think there's anyone kicking themselves after his, like, huge long run today that they didn't take him in the first round or whatever.
Yeah, he's a third round pick, right? And he was, like, a priority selection for the third round, like, according to Sean's draft board. But I did want to get your guys' thoughts on who we thought would be a good team but are secretly probably pretty terrible. And that's the Buffalo Bills, led by fraudulent quarterback Josh Allen. They've lost to the Jaguars 2 weeks ago, 9-6. And they got completely trounced today by the Colts, 41-15, which is, you know, in line with the kind of same thrashing they gave the Jets. It looks like Josh Allen's back to being bad, right? Like, terrible.
I'm trying to think in less permanent ways. You know, in Spanish, there's, like, soy, which is what you use to say, you know, I'm short, or I'm tall, or I have brown eyes. Things that'll always be that way. And then there's, like, estoy, like, for stuff that's happening right now. And the estoy, and this is, you know, I'm a Hispanic person. I don't speak Spanish, but you can't get mad at me butchering this. My dad's from Spain, so fuck off. But the estoy of the Bills, and of course of Josh Allen, yeah, these guys stink. But, you know, I like to think that's kind of a karmic magnetism, right? Like, the Bills can't be good for too long. Like, you know, it's like flooring it. It's not good for your car. Like, yeah, it's fun. Let's see how fast we can go. But you can't be flooring it all the time. The Bills just can't be good for more than one season, a season and a half tops, and then you got to start getting back to normal. So that's all it is. It's just karmic magnetism. Dev, do you agree?
I think that was definitely true for the Bills for the longest time. They couldn't get out of their own way. Now, yeah, Suddenly this is the first year where everyone is, like, you know, just tripping over themselves to praise, like, the coaching staff there. I don't know. I feel like they're doing fine. I like the fact that they just, like, throw constantly. I feel like they're still a good team that is in that mode where when things go wrong, they don't have a plan for that. So like today, when you, I think like Isaiah McKenzie like fumbled a kick, like a return, and so immediately the Colts just got like a 1 yard touchdown and went up like two scores or whatever, and then they missed, their kicker missed consecutive field goals. Like, I feel like they're a team when that happens, then you get like the old Josh Allen where he's just like forcing stuff and, you know, not really like settling in. They're just like, he has that mentality of like getting it all back on one play or whatever.
To be clear, I think trying to get it all back on one play is a little bit difficult when you're going to lean on Dawson Knox as your primary offensive weapon. You know, you're giving Diggs the same number of targets that you're giving like a 45-year-old Emmanuel Sanders and I don't know, whatever Cole Beasley is, however, whatever he does, and Gabriel Davis, right? Like you're giving, like, it's almost like Diggs is like, they saw what they did against the Jets and they were like, yeah, that was cool watching him do that, but you know what? Let's not do that when we need to. Like we're just going to give Dawson Knox 10 targets. Like there's no reason why Diggs isn't your primary read, I guess, when you fall behind on those type of plays. And I think that kind of goes down to what Devin was saying about Josh Allen becoming this like deer in the headlights, kind of trying to get everything back in one play. I don't know. I mean, it's disappointing with how this team got Diggs to essentially minimize a lot of what Allen does badly. And then they did well about it. They did well with it last year. And now they're back to essentially not target him as robustly as you'd find guys like Aaron Rodgers leaning on Davante Adams or sure. Matthew Stafford leaning on Cooper Kupp, you know, or Jimmy Garoppolo leaning on Debo Samuel, right? Like, you're just not finding this. And Diggs is clearly getting a lot of targets, but he's just not seeing the kind of volume you'd expect on a weekly basis. That Diggs, he should have like an 8 to 10 target floor, right?
Diggs is the bowling bumpers for Josh Allen. Okay, the bumpers and the lanes. Okay, and you know Allen was who he was when he was drafted. Just, you know, some bum, right? Tim Tebow on steroids, and we brought in the bumpers. We started playing with the bumpers, and it's like, oh my god, this motherfucker can bowl. Look at this guy. And then Josh Allen started feeling himself. He's like, motherfucker, I'm the best bowler in the league. Drop the bumpers. Let me show you what I could do with no bumpers. And he was, no, you're still gutter ball Josh Allen, pal. I'm with you, Hassan. You know, he's a safety net. Use it. You know, you're playing bad. I want to see 20 targets for Stephon Diggs. What's he going to do with 20 targets?
Yeah, I think we've seen it because I think he went completely off like last week, right? And it's just, I don't know, man, like, you know, it just goes back to the give these guys volume and they'll thrive.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
With everyone fighting for attention, how can your business stand out and connect with customers? Easy, with Constant Contact. Constant Contact's award-winning marketplace platform has helped millions of small businesses stand out, stay top of mind, and see big results fast. It's okay if you don't know much about marketing. Constant Contact's writing assistant tools and automation features help you craft messaging and say the right things at the right time. I use this to help write and send my email newsletters, and you should too. So get going and start growing your business today with a free trial at ConstantContact.com. Just go to ConstantContact.com right now. Constant Contact, helping the small stand tall. ConstantContact.com.
You know, another guy who's turned into a safety blanket of sorts is AJ Dillon, who he had 6 catches on 6 targets today, and he turned those into 44 yards. Didn't do much in the ground game. I wanted to get your guys' thoughts here on Godzilla. Was it an aberration from a rushing perspective? Do we expect it to work out? He got all the volume, right? So, and this receiving role, is it like for real?
I think the receiving is probably for real because, I mean, this was obviously a little bit of a shootout game. So I don't know that he'll always get 6 targets or whatever, but they've always liked him in the passing game, and he's had some role as the, you know, sort of like Jamal Williams type of plays before. So I don't think that's fluky. But you know, I'm not sure. I have AJ Dillon like in basically every league. So yeah. I'm a little bit biased, but I mean, I don't know why you wouldn't expect him to get like 4 or 5 targets as long as he's the main, you know, while Aaron Jones is out.
I don't think there's anything Derrick Henry can do that AJ Dillon can't do. And AJ Dillon can catch.
So yep.
That's how I feel about AJ Dillon.
Yeah. I actually just think that the other thing is what's weird is that he was getting this usage in the receiving game. It wasn't the rushing. He's still getting this receiving usage when Aaron Jones was healthy. That's the weird part to me, right? Like it kind of goes back to the misconception of everybody when Jamal and Aaron Jones were rookies. And it's like, well, Aaron Jones is going to be the pass catching back. And then no, it was the other way around. And now it's like AJ Dillon is the pass catching back, a guy who's got like limited, a very, let me put it this way. If you saw his resume for being a pass catching back, and I guess, I don't know, maybe he was applying for a job at McDonald's and that was his resume, right? He get turned away from that job because like it's got nothing on it. Like there was like almost no information that he was this good in the receiving game. He's like a ballerina out there though.
Like, you mean like his? You mean like in college?
Yeah.
So Dillon went to Boston College, and they, I think, are probably the runningest team in college, right? Like that's where he racked up something like, you know, 35 rushes a game. But like if you look at the percentage of targets, like whatever it is, that his market share, I guess, his dominator rating, it's actually pretty good. Sure, he would only get like, you know, 4 targets a game, but that's like, you know, 33% of the targets in a game.
Yeah, I was going to say more than that. They throw like 9 or 10 passes per game. And why would you when you have AJ Dillon back?
AJ Dillon.
Yeah.
Against 18-year-olds. AJ Dillon against an 18-year-old.
Yeah, unfair. Quadzilla against luck. He averaged like, you know, 500 yards a game or something crazy. I think I know what you're saying, but I guess I would say it's not a big surprise because the reports from out of camp, you know, we've been following AJ Dillon all this time. They keep saying that he's good at catching the ball. So we see frequently with some of these running backs that aren't good and we want them to be, and we all complain, why aren't they used in the passing game? And even when the coaches are telling us like, well, they're terrible at it. And we say, no, throw Ronald Jones the ball more. And then, you know, they finally have to, and he drops like 6 passes in a row. You're like, you're supposed to catch like all of these ones. These are 1-yard passes. Like the, you know, some of these guys just are not good at doing it. And AJ Dillon, he's always been good at it since he's been in Green Bay. So, and the fact that they use Jamal Williams that way too, where they use the complimentary back for whatever reason, they just like to do that. They like to give that guy more of the passing work, not their RB1. So, you know, I don't think it's too much of a surprise.
Yeah.
So take that, Hassan. You might've been surprised, but not us. We know AJ Dillon everywhere.
I'm still surprised. I pulled up his college stats. He had 8 catches in his sophomore season. So he had he played 10 games. He had 8 catches. Like he had like 6
and
today,
and then that was a 25% target share on
was 100% of the catches for Boston College that year, dude.
Yeah.
Context.
I know. That's what I got to do is actually like stop looking at just raw stats and look at the rest of the team.
Exactly. This is why we need Blair here. We need that. We need his weighted opportunity score with that for the college. I don't
Can
know.
Can you imagine? Sorry.
No.
Can you imagine how crowded this screen would be if Blair was here? Come on.
No, he would fit right. I feel like here's because we're like on the bottom here, and then you're at the top of the screen.
Oh, on my screen, we're three side by sides.
Yeah,
no, that's your head is at the top of the screen.
I'm not gonna do this.
Nice.
Oh, look at that.
I'm just gonna start playing around.
Yeah, I've seen this before. Hassan mode. Hassan, I like how like
there we go.
Because of the angle, Hassan's like
figured it out.
Hassan's shoulder is higher, and he looks like he's like lounging at like a hookah bar or something.
I wish
Hassan
I was
or me.
Hassan.
Hassan's the one who seems like he's at a hookah bar.
Yes, his pose. He looks like he's reclining at like an opium den.
I wish I was at one. That sounds
you're,
pretty cool.
You're at the hookah bar. He's at like the opium den though. Look at the way he's the tilt because he's like this. Look, and the couch. No, it looks like he's
you've got to relax.
It looks like he's on the floor or something.
And for those of you who are listening to this in the car, you're free to join us on YouTube 9 p.m. Sunday nights because you're going to love it.
You're going to love it. Who's at the hookah bar? Let's figure it out.
I will say, guys, like a lot of this running back talk and about running backs being dusty brings back the discussion here on Ezekiel Elliott. He had 9 rush attempts for 32 yards. Today,
yeah,
and he had 6 catches for 36. I mean, man, so friend of the show, Pete Overzet, had a really good tweet posting some 90-year-old grandpa going for like a long touchdown about how what every Zeke carry looks like after a Pollard carry. And I'll be honest, I think that 90-year-old might be faster than Zeke. Like, he's like this was a bad game. For Zeke, right? Like, it was a bad game for the Cowboys, but a really, really bad game for Zeke. Just by virtue of the fact that Amari Cooper had to miss because of COVID. He's probably going to miss on Thanksgiving. CeeDee Lamb is dealing with a couple of injuries. He left today with a concussion, and he's probably not going to play on Thanksgiving.
Terrible.
You're down to Gallup and Zeke. And
I'm looking for Noah Brown to step it up. I outbid
Noah
you.
Noah Brown,
Hassan, you had other business to attend to. You were desperately trying to snipe some auction players so you could leave the draft and get the hell out of the draft room to go about your business. And you nominated Noah Brown, and I started competitively bidding against you for Noah Brown, and you were quite furious about it, understandably so. But now it's all going to pay off for me because this is his time to shine. Sean had his like fifth year breakouts, and I don't understand why Noah Brown wasn't on there. He's on the most explosive offense, even if he was the sixth string wide receiver coming into the season. But now we're going to find out what we have.
Yeah, it's just one of those situations. I think it's going to be it's a sad Thanksgiving with no Amari and no CD, but it's going to be even sadder. It's going to be even sadder when the Cowboys refuse to unleash Tony Pollard. I don't know what they're like. I understand that extreme negative script kind of played away from it, but like at the same time, like this is the kind of script you want to be deploying Pollard in, right? It just does bring into, I mean, sharp focus. A lot of the poor decision making that goes on the coaching side for Dallas, I guess. I did want to get your guys' thoughts on Dalton Schultz. I mean, Cedric Wilson seems to be getting a lot of like buzz, but also Dalton Schultz. You know, he's viable again for as long as Amari and Lamb are out, right?
Oh, definitely. I mean, who else is there? He's a top.
Yep. Noah Brown.
He's a top 6 tight end. What does that even mean? People say that like there's some difference between 6 and 18. He's a tight end.
There's
who
no
starts.
Difference.
No, he jumps into the top of that, you know,
yeah,
into the top of that group. It's like, Mark Andrews, Travis Kelce, and then like eight guys that you might want to start. And Dalton Schultz is one of them now. Yeah, definitely. Hey. I mean, did you see the receivers? They dropped everything. Cedric Wilson had one over the middle late, and it was like it was right in his hands, and it's that thing where he felt the hit coming, mm-hmm. and he dropped it. But guess what happens when you drop it? You still get hit. They're not gonna hit you. So just catch the ball. Like there's nothing you're doing to avoid the hit. Like you still got.
I remember the play too.
And it is funny. I mean, it's easy for me to say. I'm sure it's like you think you're not doing it, and then you see the tape, and you're like embarrassed by it. But those receivers really did not step up in the absence of their stars. So I can definitely see. Prescott going back to the well, to the one thing that seemed to work, which was especially those just like little dump offs to Schultz. And he's hard to tackle and he runs well, so he just like over and over gets 8 yards. That's fine.
Oh my god, we're all gonna throw up our turkey dinners, man. Like it's not gonna be fun.
have you guys considered doing a special edition of this show, counter programming the Thanksgiving game.
Yeah, we're up against the Chargers right now, so I think our audience is probably around the same size.
We've been trying to counter program against Sunday Night Football all season. I don't like. Unfortunately, there's not going to be enough news for us to like counter program against Thanksgiving, but we're going to try to counter program against whatever we got on Sunday night.
That's nice. Good. That's good. Nice. As long as you're going for it, as long as you're going for that, you know, you're looking out there and you say, who might listen to the show? And then you're targeting the demographic, people that would not like to be watching football right now. Yeah. That's us. Those are our people. So
yeah,
I appreciate that. I like that you're leaning right into that. But to be honest, these Sunday night games have pretty much been doing you a favor, you know?
I would say so. They're unwatchable. Every Island game is unwatchable, but Sunday night especially so, for reasons I don't understand.
I know.
But you can look, I have red zone brain. Do you guys have red zone brain? You know what I'm talking about.
Of course.
It's got to be bite-sized bits. You know, give me the fucking next one. Give me the fucking next one. Give me the next one. Give me the next one. I can't watch a real game.
I have the real games and red zone. So it's even worse than what you're describing.
Yeah.
Sometimes red zone is too slow, and you
need to... you get a quick hit out of a real game. See if there's something in the red zone.
I have like,
but you got.
They have the quad box like on red zone, but I have the quad box. But one of the boxes is red zone.
Ooh.
Yeah, it's like layers to it. So, you know,
you have up to 11 boxes if red zone's doing an octo box, and you have your other three boxes.
It's so crazy. You're like, how do you even have that many games? How can you have an octo box with octo boxes within it? There's only a maximum of 16 games. I manage it. I don't know how I do it.
You just have to do it, man. That's otherwise, what else are you doing with your life, right? Like if you're not grinding the tape, but also watching the highlights and grinding the highlights.
Yeah, I play the DVR playback of previous week games if it's a slow week. That's how I
exactly
do it.
like see, fantasy analysts out there are getting outworked by Devin McIntyre.
Exactly.
There are fantasy analysts out there who are trying to find their clips and they're all 50 or they're whatever it is, all 22.
Now
Devin's already ahead. He has seen through time and space, and he's here to tell you what the future holds.
Exactly.
But I will be honest, for a lot of fantasy analysts, if I was you guys, I would stop grinding the tape really hard. You're not doing yourselves favors. Well, you're doing us favors, I guess, just from an ROI perspective on best ball. So keep doing that. Like that's just been great, I think, for us. I did want to talk just a little bit about a guy who I was trying to grind the tape on, but it's just almost too sad. It's Russell Wilson. This is the second week we've seen him back. He had like 14 of 26 passes, only 207 yards. Man, is it time? Is it like, so this is more, is it, I guess my question to you guys is twofold. One, is this team ready for this, like a very, is it headed towards this like acrimonious divorce between Wilson and the Seahawks?
Yeah,
that's question one. But two, is allowing, is basically letting Pete Carroll coach at this point, is it elder abuse?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes and yes. And for, and the reasons are related. You can't have Russ and Pete anymore. And that was long before Russ got injured. So what you've seen from Russ Wilson, okay, Russ Wilson is the top three quarterback in the league. Russ Wilson is, you know, a top three quarterback of our generation of fantasy football players and football watchers. Russ Wilson can play as long as he wants at a high level. He's unbelievable. He is a prodigy. He was put on this earth to play quarterback, and he's spectacular. He's got an injury on his throwing hand. Still, I think to me that's apparent. So I'm not you know, taking old Russ out to pasture yet. But as to the split, the incoming split with Seattle, yes, we've been saying let Russ cook as a joke for 5 years, and then 3 years ago it was not a joke. He was like, yeah, we're going to let Russ cook. And they just never fucking did. Pete Carroll, it's time. Pete. It's time.
Last year they did it for like the first six games of the season, and it was amazing. And then they were like, we got to adjust. Now they're catching on. They all know that he's going to be cooking. So we got to mix it up. And then they went on like a 10-game losing streak or something like that, where they refused to throw the ball more.
Gotta let Rashad Penny cook.
I'm not sure if that's historically accurate, but that's what it felt like. I don't know. I think that I would say that he's definitely leaving, except for the fact that he hasn't left yet. He should have left 3 years ago or whatever.
Yeah. That was when it was happening. Yeah.
And and he has not flexed any muscle to make that happen, and I don't know why. So there's something about whatever it is that Russell Wilson wants that we don't know. And it seems like maybe he's just, you know, maybe he just wants it to work out. And so
he's such a boring nerd. I guarantee you the reason he hasn't left Seattle is like, he's got a really good, just working relationship with his favorite sandwich shop by his house. Yeah, exactly. And he just doesn't want to start over.
He's like, just content.
The Jets? Get a new deli.
He's also so optimistic. He believes it's going to work out. You know what I mean?
Yeah, that's true.
And he buys into that Pete Carroll hype. And so they just think it's going to work. And then, and look, he actually, you know, they got DK Metcalf. They have Tyler Lockett. It's not like he automatically has these other places. We joked about him going to Miami before the season, and it's like, it looked a little, we thought he was gonna have Will Fuller there, and you know,
yeah,
it looked like it might be a little bit more promising, but you know, if he were, where would you like to see him go to? Is there like an obvious place that he should get the hell out so that he can
Tampa San Francisco Bay, probably. Buccaneers.
Tampa Bay. I would like to see, I think would be interesting. Because I mean, they did get the win today, but I think we all know that Kirk Cousins is on like the kind of end of his possibility there. I wonder if he could be like a Goff type where they managed to like get something for him. Somebody believes that Cousins could be like a bridge to the next thing if they can get him cheap, and Wilson could
go like Las Vegas, the Vikings.
Yeah, well, would that be a team that, because I am terrified of what's going to happen to Justin Jefferson if whatever happens after Cousins is somehow worse, which is very possible.
I was genuinely thinking that San Francisco would have been a good destination for Russ, and the Niners should have actually ponied up the three first to try to trade for him instead of like trading up and then picking a guy who they're never starting.
Usually that's go ahead, John.
Can we talk about that first? So if you're the Niners, you're going to spend your early picks on Trey Sermon and a backup quarterback. You know what?
Three first for him too.
Are we okay with this? You know, are we okay with this? How for Russ? Yeah, no, I'd rather have Russ Wilson. Like, what are you doing?
I think Well, we're hearing different stories now. Shanahan is trying to distance himself from the decision behind that pick.
Oh, wait. Sermon or Lance?
Lance.
Oh.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah.
That's
How can you do that as a – how can you distance yourself? What is he saying that –
Just more like we knew he's not going to start this year. We picked him as a project. You know,
we thought it was funny.
We were expecting him to be a longer term solution. You know, like
that's fair enough.
Yeah, which is all. I mean, all of this is fair to say. But remember, they were initially really set on Mac Jones, who is winning games as a starting quarterback. Mm.
Yeah, so, that's true. Would he be winning games in San Francisco? I don't know.
It's a good question, right? But I mean, he's winning games with Kendrick Bourne and as his like wide receiver one, and Jacoby Myers and Hunter Henry, right? Like that's kind of like,
and Nelson Aguilar.
I mean that's like
these guys are. Yeah,
collectively they are a poorer man's version of Debo and Ayuk and Kittle, right?
Those guys are all fine. I think what the problem with all those guys in the past was that they were like the number one receiver on the team. Kendrick Bourne, wide receiver one, means that your offense is probably in not great shape. And it's not his fault. It's because the five guys below him, you've never even heard of them. So the fact that they have this like Voltron of, you know, these guys that have previously had these weird shots at being the number one guy, I think it makes sense. I was not as down on those signings because I've Aguilar was totally, he was miscast as the top guy in Philly. He did totally fine in Oakland, and it's only because Oakland is kind of, nobody was taking him that seriously, that his season got overlooked. And so I think he has the speed, like they're all complimentary guys. I think really makes sense. I don't think that receiving group is as bad as people want to pretend that it is for Mac Jones there.
I think Hassan is right. And I'd rather have San Francisco's receiving weapons 10 times out of 10 as compared to New England, Dev. You know, this ain't about crucifying New England's receiving core. It's just about saying, hey, look, we're talking quarterbacks. You plug Mac Jones in where Trey Lance is, and I bet he's winning the same amount of games. Maybe 100 times more.
100 times more.
That's 100 times
that
more.
That is a lot more times.
Do the math.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, to be honest, San Francisco is always a mystery because we always think that we have a sense of like what's going to happen, and then it's like Shanahan starts saying crazy, like they have players they don't even, like everyone on the team gets hurt, and you're like, okay, well, now I guess the guy that we thought was going to be good as the next man up. And then it's like, no, they've signed someone off the street to play above that guy. And it's like, he has a doghouse that extends beyond their own roster. Like he's on the roster, but he's below guys that aren't even on the roster. So it's like, he's not even at the bottom. It's crazy. I've never seen it on any other team. You're just like, why do you not just cut these guys? But it is funny. It does seem like there's some dysfunction with Shanahan and maybe the front office or something, where they're jockeying for something to do with like who's taking blame or something like that. Because some of the choices are weird. Like you're just like, what's going on? And like Ayuk, and he's like, see, some like personal issue. And on a different team, you might think, oh, wow, this player clearly has some issue. But on the 49ers, you're just like, this guy might be fine. This guy might be completely fine. And it's just Shanahan has some issue with him for some reason.
I will bring this back to the Cardinals, because they did one player on the Cardinals has defeated the Niners in convincing fashion, and then also vanquished the Seahawks today, and that's Colt McCoy. He just absolutely has been demolishing these guys. I'm not going to issue an apology to Cliff Kingsbury and his horizontal raid. But I'm just saying, if you wanted to move Kyler to the Vikings and unleash Colt McCoy. Buddy.
That's a hot take.
Hasan. That is hot.
That is very, very hot. But I'm just saying,
Kyler Murray to be Wally Pipped
by Colt McCoy. Well,
and for the biggest Kyler Murray fan, Cliff Kingsbury, who declared when Kyler was just a twinkle in his eye, he said, "Gosh darn, if I had the 101, I'm taking Kyler Murray every time." And he didn't realize he was creating a quarterback controversy at that time. But that's how much he loves him.
Yeah, that's true. I don't even know if Cliff Kingsbury remembers saying that though, man. It seems like he actively hates Kyler, right? Like just this offense. Dev has some really good observations about Cliff and his inability to understand how to think in three dimensions, time and space, and just he says it's the air raid, but really they're just sort of doing these like little dump offs, which is pretty nice for Rondale Moore, who had 11 of 11. He caught all 11 of his targets for 51 yards.
Yeah, that was I watched part of that game, and the one announcer was like, "That's his 11th catch of the day," and the other announcer was like, "What?" like completely broke character, where he was like, thought that he certainly had made some sort of mistake, and he was like, "No, I know it's surprising. That man has caught 11 passes today. I think he caught one longer one, maybe like towards the end of the game. Yeah, his longest catch was 11 yards. That's pretty insane. I mean, that's what we wanted him. That's the role we wanted for Rondale. So there's no complaints there. It was just a little funny.
Just not rolling up the yak. And I will say, Cliff Kingsbury has been keeping me on my toes because I sat James Conner this week in a lot of spots.
What?
And he went off, too. Yeah.
Why would you ever sit James Conner?
Well, Hassan's in a touchdowns lose you points league.
That He's makes in sense.
Negative touchdown points. Yeah, you don't want sense. That.
He's been terrible then. He's been terrible. Yeah.
I started AJ Dillon and Ezekiel Elliott, and I also have Saquon Barkley on the squad, and I'm going to lose again this week. I think I've won four games. I think I'm going to be 4-7 after this week. Yeah.
It's a pretty team. That's preseason. Not good. That's a pretty team.
It's genuinely it's like one of those teams where you're like, this is where the word roster bait comes in, right? Because I've got Joe Burrow and Jamar Chase and Rashad Bateman.
Man. Oh, good God.
Well, yeah, how did you end up with Zeke though?
I was bidding him up. It's an auction league, and then accidentally, I did the Wile E. Coyote thing where I ran out over the cliff.
Yeah,
and then I realized that there wasn't any cliff underneath me, and that was that.
Yeah,
that's
that's not good.
Yeah, because
you know what they say, don't bid on players that you don't want to have, and you're like the number one Zeke hater. That's the problem. Your hatred is so biased you towards how much you think everyone else loves him.
Yeah,
because you hate him so much. You're just like, every these people, they're gonna pay 100. They're stuck in
his rookie
season. I'm just gonna lead the bidding. 100, pick 101, and then just be. And then the little music plays, and you've spent half your budget, and you were like, "What the?"
It was actually very close to that. I was like, well, you know, this is kind of around where you should go. And then it just everybody else was like, you were just bidding against yourself for a while there, man. Like,
yeah, you pulled just the rug out from under yourself.
It was really sad because my real target was Jonathan Taylor because it's a standard league. Yeah, I can't believe people still play those. So I got Zeke, and then I was like, it can't be that bad, can it? And he's been fine.
His are frozen again. I'm back.
Yeah, there you go.
You're not even frozen.
Everyone disappears and turns to those little circles. So I was panicked for a second, but
no. Hassan and I were actually turning into circles.
Oh, that's
it's
what
like
happened.
When someone stands still and you think they're frozen. No, we were just circles.
Nice.
We were just circles, dude. Yeah.
It's been a. I mean. The team is pretty nice. I think I'm in 10th place after this week. Yeah.
Hell yeah.
I won the, what was the line that Bo Burnham sang on your guys' song? I traded 4 firsts for Amari and won the Twitter poll. That's what I was doing with this.
Yeah.
Nice.
How good was that song? Come on. That song
was
amazing.
It was really good. For those of you who have no idea what I'm talking about, Bo Burnham dropped by the Solis Report in the offseason, and he came and sang his original version of what's the big song of his?
Funny Feeling.
Yeah, that's right. The one that you can now hear is the one that both Solis and Devin actually fixed after the show, because they were like, "This is very niche, Bo," and I'll give you guys so they helped him rewrite the song.
Yeah.
But fun fact, Bo Burnham is a really, really into fantasy Twitter, like really, really hardcore.
Yeah, he was
in the weeds.
Yeah, really in the weeds. He was name dropping
like CD Carter parody accounts. Like that's how deep it went.
Yeah, it was
that's impressive.
I was shocked.
I got a text today from just a real life friend, a fellow lawyer in San Diego, and he was just texting me something about, oh yeah, I followed Denny Carter's kicker advice, guy totally doinked it, and I'm like, man, worlds are colliding. Just that's so funny when that shit happens. It's like, oh yeah, fantasy Twitter, that's where I live. I know that guy.
Yeah. Do you want an apology about the kicker advice? Like
I was gonna tell Denny I'm getting like actual angry texts from people who are disappointed in his article, but nah, he doesn't need to know that. He's just doing his best.
It's a tough year to be Denny.
Yeah, I mean, you cannot script this stuff.
Oh, sorry, Dev. You did one of your trademark Dev freezies, man. It was at the funniest time, too. You're just like, it's a bad year to be Denny.
How was that? Yeah, no, I think I think that's like the just giving that kind of advice, man. Very specific targeted kicker advice is tough, because like it goes back to the conversation we had at the top of the show, which is most kickers are bad, man. Most kickers are bad.
Terrible.
You can even target the ones in a dome, and they're just not. It's not going to be. It's not a good year.
Did you watch any of the Tennessee game, Hassan?
A little bit, and I'll be honest, I kind of like flipped off of it after I saw AJ Brown get hurt. He got hurt twice, man. Like he took like a bad hit to the hand, came back out, made a few plays, and took a really bad hit to the chest, and that was that. Like he still played it out, but it was just not good. It's been a tough year for the poor guy. Like he's just been dealing with injuries.
Yeah. I knew something was going on, because if you told me that the Titans threw 51 times, which is the whole issue with them, is that you can't count on them to do that, and that AJ Brown only had 48 yards. I was like, where are these targets going? Then I looked at the box score, and it was like Westbrook,
Ilhini, I can't even pronounce it,
Ahina, and Dontrell Hilliard, and man, everyone was getting Des Fitzpatrick. That's like
Des Fitzpatrick got like that's how you know it's bad, man.
It was they were really someone named Tommy Hudson. I don't even. These are like Marcus Johnson, Tommy Hudson. These are like those video game names for, like the.
Tommy like Hudson is like players. some 1980s Boston boxer. Oh, yeah, Tommy Hudson. He's the fighting pride of Westchester.
No, well, now that you say that.
You fucking get it.
Now that you say that, it makes sense that Vrabel signed that guy. He was I got to find a spot for Tommy Hudson. He's making the team. That game was funny though, because it was like pouring rain and everyone had like umbrellas and stuff like that, but Vrabel like refused, and he just looked like a drowned rat. Like his hair was like plastered down, and
you look so strange
though. There was like no reason, like wear a hat or something. There was no reason for him to be doing that. It was like a performance.
Dude, you watched The Crow one time.
What happened? Yeah.
dude, he looked like a broken man after that final Kaimi Fairbairn field goal like went to the upright. Like, he legitimately looked broken. They showed like a clip on it, like on before we headed into Sunday Night Football, and just sort of like panned over to him, rain pouring down, like just drenched, his hair plastered over his face, and he legitimately looked just like just the most sad, pathetic visage of a man who was like genuinely questioning his will to live at this moment. Like, it genuinely, like if you could get like a screenshot of it, like, it does tell like a story of like the type of the season, because losing to the Tyrod Taylor Texans is not great. But what's also not great is that the Titans, their backup players are like Detroit Lion level backup players. And this is not a team that can actually, like, in my, like, you know, like, they're currently trying to win the division, but I don't know how they can, right? Like, I think AJ Brown didn't play most of the second half. Julio has been a bad trade move, from here on out. Now they don't have Derrick Henry. I don't know how. Do you guys have a sense for if they're going to, do you think they're going to lose out here? And like, the Colts might actually be a dark horse of the division?
That's interesting. Yeah. What is they're
2 games clear of the Colts right now.
They're 2 games.
Yeah. Colts have time.
There's what? Seven to go.
Seven to go.
So yeah, easily. We could easily get caught here.
Definitely. Yeah, here's your sports announcer cliche, but the Colts are the type of team that gets stronger as the season goes on. You know what I mean, fellas? It gets colder. John Taylor's just getting warmed up, guys. Teams are going to have fewer and fewer answers for John Taylor blasting up the middle. So, yeah, I think the Colts have to take it, don't they? Who's going to stop them? Who's going to stop them in that division?
I think Carson Wentz. the obstacle here, but yeah, no, that's interesting. I mean, it does seem to be going in a pretty tough direction for Tennessee with the personnel they've got.
I just want the Chargers to lose. That's really all I care about.
Yeah,
I
you
just
picked want the wrong time. Austin Eckler's 3 touchdowns.
He has 2 touchdowns. He's doing he's doing an homage to Jonathan Taylor. I will say this: the saddest thing about the Chargers being good is that the Spanos family doesn't deserve it, right? Like,
wow, Hassan, thank you. Yes, that is
like, someone had to say it.
It's just like Justin Herbert's a very likable face of the franchise. The entire team is incredibly, incredibly likable. And then you just know who the ownership team is, and just the fact that they just have not cared about this team at all. And then they decide to like yank the hearts of like every San Diego fan out on the way out the door so they can play second fiddle to the Rams. It just doesn't sit right with me. You know, like one of those situations wherein I'm glad the city of San Diego stood up to the family and we're like, we're not doing this. And like, it's just not right.
I voted for it. I fucking want it. Look, I take him back now, Hassan. I take him back now. I take him back in 1 second. But yes, otherwise, beautifully put, and I agree. A pox on the Chargers. And look, they'll either make it to the playoffs and exit in the first round, or
God, Justin Herbert just, oh my God, he just went like
was flying. The run, you just saw the run.
Yeah.
Took a hard hit at the end too. He's a tough kid.
Oh, holding.
Yeah. Herbert is like my, it's like my Kevin Durant. Does that resonate with you? Like for a Seattle Supersonics fan, he's my Kevin Durant. Like, that was supposed to be ours.
Right.
That was supposed to be my experience. So, yeah, very, very hard to watch.
It's a shame. I mean, the team's nice, man. It's a good team. And LA's already embraced the Rams.
They have.
Have they?
The Rams are
that's
my
team question.
Now, by the way,
have you? Are you plugged into the LA?
Yeah, that's a good question for
people.
Yeah.
Are people caring about football for the first time? They've been trying to make this happen. Is it working?
So I'm in a couple different group chats for a couple different leagues I'm in, and one of them is well represented in LA. And those guys are going to Rams games, you know, when they might not have before. I bought Rams tickets. I'm going December 4 or 5 when they play the Jags. You know, it is exciting. If this interview was 2 weeks ago, I'd say, damn, they're the best team in the league. I'm really excited to see OBJ hopefully hit his stride there. There's a Rams energy in Los Angeles, and a Raiders one still for whatever reason.
Yeah. How is it residual Raiders energy? They went to Las Vegas, and man, like everything around that team has been bad.
Yeah. Starting with the Gruden stuff, and then just kind of going from there. Yeah, they've had a.
So I have the Gruden stuff felt a little opportunistic to me because we've conveniently forgot about all the bad stuff happening on Washington when the Gruden stuff kind of came out. But conversely, Gruden also had to leave the Raiders in shame, and that means that the Raiders are no longer on the hook for $60 million. How convenient. For a head coach and GM combo that turned Amari Cooper and Khalil Mack into a bunch of guys who, outside of Josh Jacobs, who struggled really badly on Sunday, one of them killed someone in a DUI, and yeah. I think the other two or three were consensus reaches at the time, and I believe are just not capable. Like, they maybe shouldn't have even been fourth round players, if that makes sense. So like, if you're the Raiders ownership, you would use that as cover to push out this guy who you've given, you know, absolute power to, right?
It's an interesting theory. That hadn't even occurred to me, but it is certainly convenient.
It is convenient because we've forgotten everything about Washington.
Yeah.
Who are currently under FBI regulation, like they're under FBI surveillance, right? Like they've had raids and stuff.
It is weird.
Yeah, their training facility was raided by the feds about a month and a half ago.
Sheesh.
Yeah, it is weird. But the strange part is, I don't know, going after Gruden. I guess Gruden has... I don't know. Did he actually make any enemies, though? Like, he talked all, you know, badmouthed Goodell and stuff like that. But they're pretty, I mean, are they thin-skinned about that sort of thing? Or
no?
Was this just like the owners all agreed that it was like for the best thing for the league or something like that?
That Gruden would take a hike?
Yeah, like, you know, who's like, obviously, like, Dan Snyder doesn't like him, but could he have orchestrated it all by himself? You know, like the NFL is the one who had to leak those documents, right? So the selectively leak like just the Gruden emails out of the 650,000 emails or whatever. I don't know. The whole thing is strange. There's obviously.
It's very controlled, right, Dev? Like, it feels like it's very sanitized, like what we're getting and when we get it.
Yeah, of course. That's why it's so strange. I mean, unless Gruden was like the only one who wasn't able to like have enough sway with whoever to keep the lid on his emails, like he refused to pay the bribe or something. I don't know. It's very weird. I'll be curious to find out what happens. It's so strange.
I think suspecting Gruden of some noble thing is a bridge too far for me. So I'm not with you on that one. But strange that that's all we've seen.
That noble, he was just like cheap. Like he was just like,
oh, okay.
You know, they're you'll never get me. I'm untouchable. And then the whole NFL turned on him and they were like, oh, okay. But that's what's so weird. It's like not even the scapegoat. It's like a momentary distraction, right? Like I think maybe more likely was to happen because just everyone was like, he's destroying the franchise and he's going to keep destroying it for years. He has this huge contract.
Yep.
We got all the best chance. They
saw
those emails and we're like, this is it. We can get rid of them. That seems more likely than like this much larger orchestration having to do with the Washington stuff, because I don't know how they're going to stop that.
Yeah, like that. Like that's just not. I mean, you can't stop the Washington stuff, right? Like that's like the issue, is that like we're just gonna get what we get when we get it. But like, yeah, if so. if you're opportunistic and you just wanted to get rid of, you know, this sword of Damocles hanging over your head, because they would have had him for 6 more years, fully guaranteed contract, and $60 million to pay, right? Like this is like legitimately the old, because like even if you'd fired Gruden, you still owed him the $60 million, right? But this is like the only way where he can leave an embarrassment to where he like leaves voluntarily. And I think he's trying to settle with them out of court over whatever he might be owed.
Yeah. Yeah.
But this goes into law, like especially labor law, which is well above what I like. I don't know anything about the law and even less so about labor law. So.
Well, that makes three of us, right, John?
No labor lawyers here.
I don't know what's going to happen with that. It is strange. I'm sure his lawsuit is just trying to recoup some of that money. I don't think anyone just walks away from $60 million and doesn't at least make an effort to get a settlement to get some of that money back.
And so I was just going to say this next thing I was going to say is going to make Solis really sad, but Pat, I just saw Rhoda Pat tweeted out, imagine Chase Claypool, but on the Chargers. That's just like, now you're talking. Hurts.
Oh, I mean, isn't that Mike Williams? I mean,
no, because unlike Mike Williams, like Chase Claypool has been smashing since like his rookie year, right?
That's true. Mike Williams really seemed like he was, you know, I was pretty high on him going into the season, and for a while that seemed like it was.
Very savvy.
Correct. And then it's sort of things have flipped a little. I don't know if teams have made adjustments and they've adjusted back and are using him more as a deep threat again or what, but it's been, he was really doing great out of the gate and then it's kind of come back to earth a little bit.
You know who needs a shot somewhere? Martavis Bryant, huh? The alien?
I don't know what's going on with him, but I will say that Josh Gordon actually had 2 targets today.
He did.
Nice. That's nice. That makes me happy. He doesn't need to be 2013 Josh Gordon. Obviously, he's never going to be that any ever again. But for him to be, you know, going to work and being part of the game and running routes and getting targeted and catching those targets. It's like catching up with one of your old high school friends who, you know, you were worried about how they were going to turn out. And you check in on them and, okay, you know, they didn't hit it out of the park, but they're fine. Like, that's how I feel about Josh Gordon.
That's interesting. I have never had that experience. So the analogy is, I need a second analogy to wrap my head around it. But I do feel that way. I am glad that he's I don't know that it's something you can say like the league is better with Josh Gordon in it. I don't know if that's true, but I feel happy to see him I don't know. I feel like that's the Andy Reid philosophy. It's like anyone who's having trouble, he's like, bring him on the team. Better for him to be here, you know, under our roof than out there getting into trouble. That's kind of his, I don't know if it works, but that does seem to be his attitude. So it made sense that they would give him that opportunity, but I'm glad that it seems to be working out so far.
Yeah. He got the one pass for 7 yards today, which is pretty good. The team is clearly looking for, I mean, Andy Reid has a type, right? And it's fast receivers, right?
Yeah.
Josh Gordon was a fast receiver, right? All these guys on that team are fast, right? Like, leave the tight ends out of it because he's got, like, a certain archetype in mind for the tight end. But, like, for his wide receiving core, it just is, like, a
Are you fast? Well, you're probably going to be drafted by the Chiefs, right? Like, so like Byron Pringle, like he's just a fast guy. He's just a fast guy. Like all these guys, you'll note, will actually, they score really, really high on our freak score calculator. Suggests Andy Reid subscribes to RotoViz and solely uses that for his scouting.
I think that's probably true.
It's probably true. Yeah.
Yeah. I think that's definitely true.
We should have.
Do you lose speed over time? Like, do you actually lose speed over time? I mean, in a meaningful way. Is a guy in his 30s, early 30s, slower than a guy in his early 20s? Is he?
Yeah.
Yeah. But, like, you got to keep in mind, Tom Brady is probably faster than a lot of very talented, very fit guys today, right? It's all relative, very relative scale.
Tom Brady is?
Yeah. Yeah.
That guy's lightning compared to...
I mean, he has long legs.
Know? Yeah.
Indeed.
But I think
he exercises regularly.
I mean, Tom Brady is faster. I think it's possible that Tom Brady is faster now than he was 10 years ago.
Combine? Oh, yeah, sure. Definitely. He's like an athlete now.
Yeah.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah, it was funny. Did you see Matt Ryan had like that run the other week, and they were like, "Do you feel faster this year? We haven't really seen this side of you. Or do you feel like you're moving faster?" And he was like, "Nope,
nope."
I was like, "What is this question? Matt Ryan is not faster. What
faster than ever at age 38?
Man,
Philip Rivers was never afraid to rip one off." I don't know if you remember, even in Indy, he would go for a little gallop. But anyway, I digress. Sorry, Hassan.
What I was actually going to say, speaking of guys who we hope to see is Calvin Ridley, right?
Yeah.
Like, you know, kudos to him for actually stepping away and recognizing that he needs the help, right? Like a lot of guys tend not to do that. So
sure.
Just hope that he decides to come back and, the game is better. Like, it is better with him back in it. Just ask the Falcons. Like, just ask the Falcons.
True. Yeah, that is true.
I mean, the team put the world on Kyle Pitts' shoulders, and he just said, "Nope, this is not for me, guys. This is not how I roll."
Yeah.
You wanted someone to catch the ball. Should have taken Jamar Chase instead.
Yeah. Guy's a wide receiver. I'm a tight end.
And he's fast. That's the thing.
He is fast. I mean, look, Cordero Patterson was out of the game, right? So what do you expect? That's he's the engine that makes it work. So I don't think anyone ever lost betting on betting on Cordero Patterson.
Mm-mm. No. Guys, I do want to say this has been tremendous. And that'll do it for this edition of the Fantasy Football Report. Before we get out of here, what are you guys going to be eating for Thanksgiving? What's your ideal plate? And where can everybody find you?
John, let me take this.
Do you want to go first? You want me to go first?
You can go first.
I'll go first. So I'm going to be eating Thanksgiving in San Bernardino with my cousins. And usually we have like a hodgepodge of your traditional American style stuff, the turkey and, you know, mashed potatoes and whatever, but then it's kind of like a potluck buffet of Filipino food and sometimes oddball things, like someone might bring a lasagna or something like that. So ideal plate, I don't like Thanksgiving food, so I'll probably be eating the other stuff. I'm probably going to be having, like, you know, pasta and like a shitload of carbs and like pizza or something.
So the lasagna is you're describing yourself. Who brought the lasagna? We all want to know who brought the lasagna. I guess I'll have some.
Who brought my signature recipe lasagna?
I think I have this I have this baking dish. We have this baking dish, don't we?
Okay, fucking weird. Just you can yourself. Find me at Solis Report, Solis Report on Twitter if you want more of the stats and data that you got from me today.
Yeah, and for, you know, all of my grinding the tape tips, I am at DevinMCI. You can see my pinned tweet. It is still that Bo Burnham song. So nothing has topped that since whenever that went down. And, really what a Thanksgiving. I'm like in the middle. I would say stuffing. I do like, I feel like that's the one where you're like, when you don't really ever eat that in the rest of the year, or maybe some people do, but it's not really a staple. So that's something I look forward to. And like dessert, Thanksgiving dessert, pies.
Pies.
Yeah.
That's the way to do it.
I'm on board with that. So that's my idea.
Yeah.
Hassan, you got to go too.
Yeah, absolutely. So it's going to be a traditional Thanksgiving plate. You know, just the usual, honestly, the only time of year I'm ever going to eat this stuff. So I'm going to eat it once a year. The stuffing, you know, stuffing, the carbs, potatoes, turkey, gravy. Where we were unable to get some prime rib this time around, which is my fault. And so we're trying to supplement. We're trying to pivot. We're going to try and get a late swap here to lamb, which is also looking a little difficult. Just by virtue of me deciding that we should be late swapping to lamb. The issue is there might not be any available, given that we are a few days out from Thanksgiving, but. And there is no reward here for credit, but just in the event that we do have it, we'll be having that as well. Gonna probably try and really have a lot of pie, I think. Pumpkin, apple, cherry. Hopefully not humble, just by virtue of my teams are doing pretty well.
Never.
Last Thanksgiving, I managed to bink a couple of GPPs. So we're trying to run it back this year.
Nice.
Please remember to rate and review the RotoViz Radio channel and Apple Podcasts. Listen to the Solis Report. Those are evergreen episodes. You're going to love them. Thanks, everybody. Have a happy Thanksgiving, and thank you for listening.